right, this is how you know a betting number is a number maybe to pounce on. That if it's enough to have Seth Payne text me while he's out for these next few days. We get these emails, and we'll get to the Astros here in a second, I promise. We get these emails from a PR guy named Jimmy Shapiro, who's a friend of the show. We've seen him at Radio Row over here. Jimmy's a great guy. And he represents some betting outlets, and they send out numbers for different over-unders and spreads throughout the year and some fun ones and things like that. He just sent out season totals on stats for something like 100 different players in the NFL. Sacks, interceptions, total tackles. There's four Texans on this list. Azeez Al-Shaair, Danielle Hunter, Will Anderson, and Derek Stingley Jr. They're all on this list under different stat categories. Seth texts me, and he's like, where do I pound over 9.5 sacks for Danielle Hunter this coming season?
Yeah. It feels like he's
close. You're betting on health at that point.
Yeah, he's feel like he's close to automatic for that. Like, he's a solid 11-sack bet. I mean, he's had 16.5 or so in a season.
He's
before.
Double digits almost every year in the NFL. Yeah. He's been around for damn near a decade now. Yeah, like, and he showed no signs last year of slowing down at all. If anything, this was like a somewhat, it feels weird to say because the Vikings in recent years have been a more successful team than the Texans. Hell, the Texans have never beaten the Vikings. But it did feel like last year was kind of a coming out party for Danielle Hunter in that he was playing in some more high-profile games. And maybe I'm misjudging that, but it feels like a lot more people are and were paying attention to what Danielle Hunter is doing with the Texans than anything he was ever doing with the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, I mean, I know the Vikings had some success, a little bit of success while he was there.
Sure.
But this is arguably, I should say last year's team was arguably the most high-profile team that he had been on.
I think so, too.
Given what all they had done, like, I think it helps the context of Danielle Hunter already being Danielle Hunter when he gets there. And it's like, oh, they got Danielle Hunter. Oh, they got Stephon Diggs. Oh, they got Joe Mixon.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, they're bringing back all of these young players who were excellent as rookies. Oh, they got new rookies that are really good.
Yeah.
Like, I think all of that coming together made it a little bit more high profile.
Danielle Hunter's number is 9.5. It sounds like you would pound the over.
Yes.
It sounds like you might even run it, go do that.
Yeah, I'm itching to do so.
Yeah. Yep.
Before they change the number.
14 minutes in the segment left still, B. Scott.
Damn it.
What do you think their number is for Will Anderson Jr.?
For sacks?
I've got it in front of me here. What do you think it is?
I'm going to go 11.5.
It is 11.5? Give the man a ding.
It's funny because I waffled on that because I was at first going to go lower, but I'm like, no, I feel like the money's going to be higher on his upside and being a younger player, an emerging player, if you will.
Yeah.
So it'd be smarter to go over. So, yeah, just pick the number there. 11.5 is the over-under. That's an interesting number.
Would you go over or under? I think that's exactly what he had last year, if I'm not mistaken. He was in that neighborhood. He got double-digit. I know that.
Yeah, I am just a huge, huge Will Anderson fan.
He's my favorite player on the team.
Yes, mine too. Same. Yeah. So we're in the same boat there. Yeah, this would be one where I'd be betting my heart and head there. My brain is telling me yes, and my heart is certainly telling me yes. Bet on Will Anderson.
It's over or a no play for me. I'm not betting on failure for Will Anderson Jr.
I like that.
Yeah, I'm not doing it.
I agree.
I'll rapid fire the other two at you since we're on this topic. Derek Stingley Jr., how many interceptions do you think the number is?
Ooh, this one's going to be the harder one for me. 4.5.
2.5.
2.5.
2.5.
All right. I was being a little too gracious.
I wasn't going to do that, but Ben,
it was wrong. Yeah. I take the ding when I'm right.
You're allowed to be wrong, but you have to be within a certain percentage, and you're like almost double off. Yeah.
And look, I picked way over.
No, that's true.
I'm drinking all of the Texans Kool-Aid with extra sugar that you can get today.
And I go over on that too, just because Stingley. I think I would be like, oh, well, he just has to get three picks. He had two against Tua in one game.
I was going to say he's known to get a couple in a game.
That is they are not going to target him as much this year kind of number.
Yeah.
Feeling is what that is, I think.
Well, and here's another thing too that you got to remember. The Texans play the Jags twice a year, right? That's still the case?
Yes.
Which means presumably he's going to go against Trevor Lawrence.
Oh.
And he likes to pick off Trevor Lawrence.
Pick machine. That's true. He does like doing that. He was doing that even during his rookie year.
Yeah. So there's at least one.
Yeah. Good call.
scratch that one off.
The only other one is tackles. I have no feel on that. They have Azeez Al-Shaair over under 120 and a half tackles.
120, I don't know.
I have no clue. I have no clue.
He's going to get a lot of tackles.
The problem for Azeez Al-Shaair is the next time he takes somebody's head off, are they going to suspend him for 6 games, for 8 games, for a season?
He's got a reputation.
He's got
now.
A rep, man.
And apparently had one already before we really knew how known or spoken of the rep actually was.
Yeah.
So all of that is there. But look, if the bet was lead the team in tackles, I guess that's not, you know, a bold bet there to say that the Mike linebacker and the team captain on defense is going to lead the team in tackles. But I think he's definitely going to lead them in tackles. Is it going to be, what is it, 120 and a half?
120 and a half. I have no idea. I think he had 160 one season. I think his season with the Titans, he had a boatload of tackles. Tackles is one that I'm just not, I don't care.
Yeah.
This Isak Paredes injury. You know, I know yesterday was a good day for the Astros overall. They win 11-3. They kind of keep Seattle at arm's length. They're headed to Arizona now to take on the Diamondbacks. Diamondbacks are starting three guys whose ERAs are all in the high fours or low fives. Now, one of them is Zach Gallen tonight, who's historically he's been a Cy Young candidate.
Right.
He hasn't been able to put it together this season. And the Diamondbacks are an interesting team because I think they're being viewed right now as a team that could be big time sellers here at the trade deadline. You know. The Astros scouting any of these guys that they're looking at. You know, the interesting one, I don't think they've got the ammo to go do it, but Suarez, their third baseman, is one of the real plums that a lot of the big teams are looking at here at the trade deadline. He's third in the league in home runs right now, I think, behind Aaron Judge and Cal Raleigh, or third in the majors. And I don't think the Astros are in the running to get him. I think they'll easily get outbid by somebody who wants him. But third base is now a problem for this team.
Yeah,
and how big a problem we're going to find out here. I would imagine in the next day or two with Isak Paredes having been sent back to Houston yesterday to come home and get an MRI. And I want to applaud the Astros for actually using their MRI machine
this
time. There
you go.
Way to dust off. I just picture them walking over and blowing like dust off the top of it.
Yeah.
Like, wow, we really should have used these before we misdiagnosed several of these other injuries.
It's cobwebs inside of it. They're knocking them down. No spiders, just webs.
It's old enough. There's like a crank on the side of it that they're cranking it up like an Edsel or something like that. Like, let's get this MRI. How worried are you about this Isak Paredes injury?
Very.
Right, yeah, I am very, too. Very, I did not like the way he pulled up.
Very, very worried. And even just the fact that, and we, I think, make fun of and sometimes get frustrated with the Astros for not being as open and as transparent as they can be about injuries. But I will credit them for just being candid about it with Isak Paredes himself, with his translator, and then Joe Espada in his subsequent media availability saying that A, it didn't look good or it doesn't look good, and B, or maybe this was actually A and that was B, but A, Isak Paredes himself saying that it feels worse than the last one did.
Yep.
Remember the last time it was the other hamstring, and he was ready to go out there the next day. He's like, oh, I'll be ready. I'll be ready to go.
They gave him the weekend off.
And they gave him the weekend off, but he felt well enough to at least do the tough guy thing of, hey, I'm ready to go. Yeah. And there was none of that in this.
Oh.
Like, it felt worse than last time. I got to go back to Houston to check it out. And it took a much more somber tone this time around than it did the last time around, which makes me worried. Now, I am glad that it's happening before the trade deadline as opposed to, let's say, after the trade deadline, but that still doesn't make me feel great.
No.
Especially given where the Astros are with their injuries.
This has to be a super tough trade deadline for a GM to navigate right now, for Dana Brown to navigate, just given the timing of some of these pitchers that are on the comeback trail. It would be really nice to know. Like, look, we know Spencer Arrighetti had a rehab start in Corpus this weekend, and he looked good. He pitched three scoreless innings, struck some guys out. Luis Garcia pitched two scoreless innings, struck a couple guys out. His throwing motion just looks so drastically different to me. Like, he looks like he's shot putting the ball up there. I don't know what to make of that.
Is that supposed to make him better? Is that safer? I don't know what's going on.
Or is that just something like, is that
an effect?
Is that how it feels?
Right.
You know, like, is that how is he protecting his elbow in some way? Now, he is the one out of all these guys, too, though, that's had to change his routine just based on the changes in baseball with the pitch clock and how they're being more vigilant about the sliding on the rubber and the balking and things like that. He had that whole rock the baby. He had that deliberate windup that took so long.
But it's never good when a dude changes his wind up and you're like, is he doing that on purpose?
Yeah. Now, if he's striking guys out and he's getting results, then
keep doing it.
He can throw underhand for all I care.
Sure.
Javier is the one that I think I'm getting, allowing myself to get super optimistic about. It sounds like he's been, hitting peak velocities on the gun. But as far as Dana Brown goes, this has got to be really difficult to navigate because you're in this in-between phase with Yordan Alvarez. You're in this kind of just getting back phase with some of these pitchers. So we know that their pitching rehab starts, but we don't know what it's going to look like when they get to the big league level. Can you trust them that it's going to, especially the guys who are Tommy John, who've been out for a year, in the case of Garcia, 2 years. Eric Geddy's the one that I probably trust the most right now just because his was a fluky hand injury, a thumb injury, but which is really weird to say that I trust Eric Geddy more than two guys who were mainstays on a World Series winner a few years ago, so Yordan, Pena, I'm confident he'll be back soon, but they're taking it slow with him. This is all happening with the trade deadline like 9 days away right now.
Yeah, so
with a team that doesn't have a ton of dry powder to go make big deals with.
Yeah, and to be fair, they've been that way for a long time, but because of that, they're even more so that way now because every year this seems to come up in some form or fashion where they're buyers at the deadline. And we all talk about how the farm system is barren. They don't have a lot of prospects to offer, but they somehow find a way to offer just enough, whether that's prospects or guys that are already on the roster or whatever it is, and they figure it out. But man, like if you had asked me this or asked me before the season, who's the one guy that the Astros can't afford to lose for an extended period of time, I would have said Yordan Alvarez for good reason, right? For like obvious reasons.
He's their best player.
Because he's Yordan Alvarez, yeah. Right? Well, they've been without Yordan Alvarez since May 2nd, and they're leading the American League West. They're one of the better teams in the American League, and they seem like a contender.
They've been without him all year, really.
They've been without him all year.
He wasn't good when he was around.
Exactly. Yeah. What they haven't been without, and who's been somewhat of a revelation and a saving grace for them, is Isak Paredes.
Yeah.
They're arguably most consistent guy in the lineup. So that's the one guy that I feel like now, and this is fast forwarding from before the season to now, where we are with the information we have today, he's the one guy that I feel like they can't be without for an extended period of time.
It's the crazy thing. Mauricio Dubon's value to this team is getting so accentuated, and it's not like he's putting up dynamite offensive numbers or anything. He's excellent defensively. That's inarguable. But when in the past, anytime any one of these one-offs comes up, you're like, well, just put Dubon there. He'll play for, when Altuve breaks his hand before the season in the World Baseball Classic, well, Dubon plays second base for you, and he was fine. He was an average major. You bring in a replacement guy like that, if they're average, that's good. So
when they didn't have an answer in center field, Dubon can be the personal throwing center fielder for Justin Verlander.
For Justin Verlander, that's right. So weird. They've got like four situations going on right now that are just put Dubon there situations.
Yeah, they need four of him.
They need four Dubons right now.
Yeah.
Which is, just to plug the hole. I'm not saying like Dubon, boy, you need four of him because he's going to get you 30 home runs and 100 RBIs. He's not. But you need four of him because you at least need a competent big leaguer there. That's where maybe the value in Dubon has been accentuated this year, is that you've had a chance to see what it looks like when you have, like, you joke around about a guy being a replacement player or replacement level player or whatever. No, we've had a chance to see what not even replacement looks like across multiple spots in the lineup for way too many days this season so far.
Yeah, and to their credit, they've actually, all things considered and within its proper context, they've actually done pretty well considering the fact that they shouldn't be in these positions to begin with. Some of these players that are being thrust into these positions shouldn't be there to begin with. Like the shorts of the world and Tremels and all these guys that are out there, and you're like, well, wait a minute, where does this guy fit into things? All things considered, they've done pretty well. And even with that, you're like, man, when do the real guys come back?
Yeah.
Like, when can we get some of these real guys back? So the Isak Paredes news is huge. And like, honestly, if he's not going to be around for an extended period of time, that to me is debilitating.
Yep. Text messages coming in. Think about it, Sean. This is going back to the Texans over-under of 9.5 wins. If they sweep the division, that's 6 wins. They only need to win 4 of their remaining 11 games to get over 9.5.
Okay,
people underestimate the difficulty of sweeping even a bad division.
There you go.
They lost to the Titans at home last year. Yeah. Like, this is the Texans are a good football team. They're a way better football team than they were before D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud got here. I'm not breaking any news. They are not a good enough football team to where you just pencil in 6-0 in the division.
Yeah, I'm not predicting them to sweep the division because of how difficult that is, because of how squirrely some of these division matchups end up. You mentioned the Titans game. Those Jags games are always interesting. The season opener against the Colts, I know they won that game, so we kind of just act like it didn't. But it was close for a second there. Anthony Richardson with three plays almost was able to win that game for them, not even really playing that well. So that happened.
Forget about that Colts game. The Colts game in week 8, the one that Diggs got hurt in.
Oh, yeah.
They won by 3, and they needed Anthony Richardson to throw one of the most boneheaded picks of all time right before the half.
Yeah.
To get a touchdown. Like, he threw that pick to Jalen Petrie.
Yeah.
Right before the half, and they gifted them 7 points in a 3-point win at home.
Yeah.
So that's I love your optimism.
One of the rare ties that we've seen in Texans history
against the Colts
to start the season. Yeah. I mean, like, it's
it was a semi win, Michael Irvin. That's right.
But doesn't count as a win.
Does not count. Nope. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Brandon Scott in for Seth Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week. All right, I saw a graphic on social media that had the most hated player by all 32 NFL fan bases. I don't know, man. I hate this guy, but I don't know that he's the most hated for Texan fans. We'll see if you agree. Get your typing fingers ready, everybody. We'll do that coming up next.